This is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 46, and today I'm going to be giving a top 5 list, and on that list are going to be items that are developmental milestone activities for infants that I feel like are up there in the top 5 most important ones that you can do with them. Of course, there are lots of important developmental milestones with babies, but I wanted to go over these 5 specifically today. First of all, I wanted to go back and talk about the interview with Jill Loftus in the previous episode. I know there were a few glitches in the audio. There was a section of the interview that somehow went missing. I'm still not sure what happened. I don't know if there was an issue with the phone connection or what. But as you all know, I'm still trying to figure out this whole podcasting thing. So this was the first interview that I recorded and edited. So all in all, I would say it went pretty well considering. I can tell you some of the things that were missing from the interview were pieces of the pros to having the in-home therapy versus clinic therapy. Some of the things that we discussed were things like how personal it is to have the therapist coming into your home. And as a parent of a child with special needs, it can be nice to have that one-on-one connection with the therapist because we can really focus on the individual needs of that child and the family, and how all of the dynamics work with everyone involved in the family. It is nice for the family to have therapy at home also because it is one less after-school type activity to work into their schedule. Everyone has such busy lives already, and it can be one less thing to try and fit in where you have to drive and plan to get there. By having therapy at home, the therapists come to you, so it is more convenient for the family, and everyone has an opportunity to be there if that's what the family wants. I wanted to thank Jill again for doing the interview with me. I had a lot of fun doing it. She did a really great job of talking and giving all her information to us. I had a chance to talk with her after the interview ended and got to know a little bit more about her. She is definitely an expert in the field of occupational therapy, and I would encourage you to reach out to her if you live in the Denver area. Even if you are an OT in that area, she seems like an innovative person that is, like she said, changing what she does and trying to make it work with what people are wanting. So maybe you could collaborate with her on some new ideas or something. I also think it would be interesting to talk with her again and maybe do another interview after she gets her book finished. So again, go to the MyMidwestTherapy.com website and the Community Resource Directory page and find Honest Jill's information. And look her up and give her a call or contact her. Now, for my top 5 list, just to let you know, these are not in actually any particular order as far as importance of 1 through 5. They are just 5 activities that I feel are important enough to mention in this episode. So the first one that I want to talk about is bonding and attachment. And this bonding process and attachment process starts at birth. When the baby is born and the nurse hands them to you, the process is starting. And it progresses from there as you go home and you continue holding them and taking care of them. And they start being awake a little bit more often. They will begin to understand that when you pick them up, they will relax, they will cuddle into you holding them, and they will be looking at your face, they will be smiling at you at first reflexively, but they will eventually smile at you socially as well. They'll make eye contact with you from an early time. I mean, even the first couple of weeks, you see a lot of eye contact, and it happens especially when you're holding them close and you're cuddling or you're feeding them. And when they get upset and they're crying for some reason or they're fussing and you pick them up, they will relax their body and calm down. Now, of course, if they're hungry or their diaper is dirty and they need a new diaper, they may not just calm down from you picking them up. But they will start to understand that within the first few months that when they're crying and you pick them up, that it's going to get better. These first 2 to 3 months of life are a really important time for developing all these social skills and their eye contact with other people, and they're enjoying being held by you and enjoying being close to their parents, smiling socially when you smile with them, and when you talk to them, they respond to your voice. All of these things are very basic skills for communication and socialization, which we usually think of these things happening later when they're talking and when they're doing more running around and stuff like that. But we can get a pretty good gauge of how that time period later might go based on what things look like, even in this very, very, very beginning stage. Okay, the second activity that I'm going to talk about today is tummy time, of course. I can't leave this out of my top five list. Tummy time, as you guys know from probably experience and from listening to my previous shows, is one of the most important things to do with infants. And, you know, tummy time is not just a thing that we do. Tummy time is something that should be incorporated in your daily routine and every day, and just variety of times throughout the day. I would not say we need to do tummy time 3 times a day for 3 to 5 minutes each time. I would say, you know, unless you have a therapist that you're working with because your child has delays or there's some other thing going on, but in just a typical 0 to 6 month old, we're talking about just doing it as part of our natural routine. And even those kids that maybe do have special needs or are receiving services for gross motor delays and other potential delays, I still encourage you to do this activity during your natural routines as well. That really doesn't change for me unless there's something special going on, like I said. But the benefits of tummy time are so huge. For one, it starts to strengthen your head and neck muscles. And I'm not just talking about so that you can pick your head up, which is the reason we do this, but also because it strengthens the muscles inside your neck for safe swallowing and for speech and language development. These are things that we need, and this tummy time is a very, very good way of getting that strength and that endurance built up for those areas. It also starts to develop the natural curves in your neck and your back, which later when you get to crawling, that continues into more detail, obviously. And one of the other things is that it keeps their head a little bit rounder. With the back to sleep movement and just in general now, all the time that babies spend on their backs in either like their car seats or just on the floor or in their little bouncy seats, when they're in these things, the back of their head is touching the surface of whatever it is. And so this continues to encourage potentially having a flattened spot on the back of their head. Now, some babies also will end up having torticollis, which is where one side of your neck gets tighter than the other side. One side of, in that same side of the neck, the muscles can get shorter. So that when that starts to happen, and a lot of times that happens because there might be some weakness on one side of their neck or the other, and sometimes it just happens because they're in one position for a long amount of time, or they're in one position frequently, and that they aren't encouraged to change their head position often enough. So that could happen like when they fall asleep in their car seat, and maybe they always fall asleep the same way and their head's leaning to one side. So these kinds of things can encourage the head to turn to that side more often and continue that process. And also at that same time would continue to make the back of their head or the kind of the backs and the to the side of their head a little bit flatter, which would continue to encourage their head to go that direction. So that was a long explanation, but basically we want to try and prevent this flattening to from happening. And we also would like to try to prevent torticollis from happening if it's due to position or at all anyway. But how we do that is to encourage them to turn their head to both sides equally. And if you start to see them turning to one side or favoring one side more often, and it's due to this flattening or due to the position, then we really need to make sure and encourage them to turn to the other side. And some things you can do for that is when you're changing their diaper on the changing table, you can, one time you lay them facing one direction and the next time you change and you face them the other direction so that they're going to want to turn probably to look towards you. So we want to give them the chance to turn their head to each side to look for you. And the same when you put them in their crib at night or for their nap, you want to put their head at one end and then switch the next time and put their head at the other end for the next time. And this will, you know, because again, the same thing, they're going to want to look towards you or they're going to look towards the middle of the room or they're going to look up at the fan or whatever it is that they prefer to look at. And we want those things to encourage them to turn their head both ways. So by turning their body, when especially when they aren't able to move yet, this is a perfect time to do that because you know that you can get both sides looking equally. Another thing you can try is from the beginning, when you put them on their tummy and maybe their head is turned to one side, you can make sure that you, after a couple of minutes, you turn their head to the other side, or after a certain amount of time, you turn their head so that they're facing the other side. And at least even before they're picking their head up off the floor or off your tummy or off your chest or whatever, wherever they're at, they can at least still, you're encouraging that neck turning and then keeping it from getting tight on either side. So, you know, even in the first couple of weeks after they're born, babies are starting to lift their head up. So when they're laying on your chest, on your body, you can be at an angle, like a reclined position, and that helps them so they don't have to go quite as much against gravity to lift their head up. They have a little bit of help because they're at an angle, and that's okay. So let them do that and try to look up towards you, and they're going to naturally usually want to see your face. So if you're talking to them especially and they're trying to see who's talking, and that will help encourage them to lift up their head even more. And if they're on the floor, you can also put them over there. If you have a boppy pillow, you can put them on their tummy over the boppy, and this will again put them at an angle so that they don't have to go all the way up from the floor to start. But there is also nothing wrong with putting them flat on the floor and being down there with them and trying to encourage them to pick up their head up all the way off the floor from being flat as well. Of course, it's going to be pretty hard at first, and that's just how it is, but they will continue to practice, and they'll gain strength every day by doing that. So that is for sure something that every baby needs to be able to try to do and to the best of their ability. And also, once they are holding their head up and being able to turn their head to both sides, then you should see them holding their head up even longer and keeping it up and just building that strength and building that endurance. Like I said, all of that will help with their swallowing skills. It will help with their language, and it will just reinforce the strengthening of their neck muscles and everything that's not only on the outside where where they're lifting their head up, but on the inside where they're swallowing too. So very important skills for later on. And also, if they don't like to be on their tummy, it's going to be harder to get them to crawl. So we want to make sure that they're okay with it. Also keep in mind that when they're on their tummy and they're lifting their head and they're strengthening their head and neck, that they're also at the same time starting to use their arms and hold some weight on their forearms at first, which starts to strengthen their upper body and their arms, and their shoulders and all the joints of their arms start to become more stable, and everything around the joints start to get stronger and hold itself together. So this also sets the stage for when they are going to start crawling later as well. Okay, so naturally, you might guess that my third item on my list is crawling. And crawling is where we continue to develop head and neck strength and stabilize our joints, not only now the shoulders and the elbows and the wrists, everything in your arms, but now we're also stabilizing hips, knees, and feet and ankles. So all your joints in your body are becoming stable by weight bearing and holding your body weight up. You are working on keeping every joint in place and developing the muscles and the muscle strength around each joint and keeping everything where it's supposed to be. Now, crawling also encourages the natural curves in your neck and your back to continue to develop. And this is very beneficial for our posture and for sitting, and later on when we're sitting independently, or now when we're starting to sit independently potentially. And also, crawling encourages reciprocal movements, which are your coordinating your right and left sides of your body. And so when we crawl, it's a similar pattern as to how we walk, where you swing your arms at the same time your legs are moving when you're walking. Well, this is the same thing with crawling. You crawl and you move your left leg forward and your right hand goes forward, and you move your right leg forward and your left arm or hand goes forward. So this encourages the right and left sides of your brain to work together and to coordinate the opposite limb from each side of the brain. So this is really, really, really important development in not only your body strength and endurance and coordination, but your brain development as well. So some of the potential effects of not crawling would be that you might be uncoordinated. So that once they're older and they're walking now and they're running, you could see this where they would potentially fall quite frequently, or they might trip over things a lot when really you wouldn't expect them to be tripping over things anymore. They might walk when they go up and down steps. Instead of alternating one foot on each step, they would go up and put both feet on a step before going up to the next one, which is how we start out by going up steps, but then we graduate to alternating. So I'm talking about when they should be alternating and they're still not. You might have trouble with two-handed activities. One of those pretty obvious activity is catching a large ball with both hands and being able to coordinate both hands to move together to do the same thing and to get the ball. Another thing would be fine motor skills, which are things where you use both hands for like tying your shoes or stringing beads or cutting. So when you hold the paper with one hand and then you use the scissors to cut it with your opposite hand, or you hold the paper steady while you color on it with the other hand, these are some of these activities are things where your hands are both doing the same thing. They're mirroring each other. But some of these are where one hand is doing one thing and the other hand is doing something different, although usually related to the same activity. Another example would be when you're eating, you might hold your plate or you hold your bowl steady if it's sliding around on the table, and you scoop the food with a spoon in your opposite hand or a fork or whatever. Also, with eating, like if you're trying to cut something, of course, when you're older, you might hold the fork in one hand and use the knife in the other hand. They could also have some difficulty with reading and writing skills once they get to that point. And this is really because they haven't had this practice of coordinating the right and left sides of the brain and body. So the child who doesn't crawl could potentially have trouble when it comes to reading and writing because they're not able to track across crossing midline. So they're not able to start on the left side and with their eyes and read across to the right side. They might just have trouble staying on the line and keeping track of where they're at. And also writing on paper and crossing across the midline while they're writing. So these are all things that we do, and we want them to be okay and able to do these as well. There's a lot of parents that I've talked to over my career in working with infants and toddlers, and sometimes when I come to meet them, they'll tell me they're just really not that interested in crawling. They want to skip crawling, and I'm pretty sure they're just going to go straight to walking instead and just not crawl. And these parents seem like they're okay with it, but I'm not really convinced that they actually totally are okay with it. I think they kind of know that maybe that isn't quite right or maybe what their child should do, but they don't really know what else to do. So, and they don't always know if it's important, if they need to crawl. So I'm telling you now that it is important. They do need to crawl. And for those parents who think, well, my child might just skip crawling, I would tell you, I would not let them skip crawling. I understand that it might be more of a struggle and there may be something else going on where they're having some weakness somewhere or who knows what, because there are lots of reasons why babies maybe don't want to be on their hands and knees or on their tummy. So, but I want you to encourage them to do it. And even if they're past the crawling time and they have learned to walk, I would encourage you to have them go back and do more crawling now. It's not too late. I would still encourage them to go back and just crawl through tunnels or do obstacle courses. Make it fun. Make it a game. Because if they're walking, they're probably past when they would normally have been crawling. So, you know, they're going to have to be a little more creative and find reasons for them to get back down and crawl. But still a really good idea and can still reinforce the crossing midline, the connecting right and left sides of their brain and body. And those are important for all kids. And if your child missed the crawling, then they need to go back so that they can get that going as well. And I know there are kids that don't crawl and they're probably fine, but I know that there is more of a risk of having some of these other potential concerns or effects from not crawling. And so I would just rather not get there and just get them crawling and make sure that we cover it all. Now, also for this crawling stage during development, I would expect them to typically be crawling between around 8, 9, 10 months old. If they're not crawling by 12 months, then I would probably start to get concerned that something else might be going on, and maybe we need to talk about having an evaluation or an assessment, or just talk to their pediatrician about it. But generally around 8, 9, 10 months is an average time for our babies to start crawling. And certainly if they're crawling before that, I'm not upset about that either. A fourth activity on my list that I feel is very important is babbling. And babies, you know, they start making sounds basically at birth. They're usually crying, and that's their first sound. But they do pretty quickly within the first month or two learn how to make more comfort sounds, we call them, where they're more vocalizing, but they're more just kind of showing you that they're okay. They're just making some vowel sounds. They start making sucking sounds with their lips and their mouth in general. And also, as they continue to develop, their cries become more purposeful, I guess. They start to vary in their pitch, and they change in volume. They get louder and quieter when they want to. They figure out how to make that happen. And they also get to a point where you can start to determine what it is that they're crying about, if it's their hungry cry, or they have a dirty diaper cry, or they're just tired. These things start to become more apparent as they become a few months old. They also start laughing, and around between 2 and 4 months of age, you can start to get the babies to laugh. And beyond that, we really want to try and encourage their cooing sounds, their vowel sounds, and to get them to basically do vocal play back and forth with you. So if they're making a sound and then you imitate that sound while they're doing it, then that encourages them to continue doing it again and do it more. And as they get good at that and they start to understand that's the game, then you can try and encourage that sound and then change it just a little bit to a different vowel sound and see if they notice and see if they can do that as well. These are very important skills for communication. And it's also, it kind of plays back with the social piece and the reciprocal joint attention that we look for, as far as understanding that you're doing something and now I'm doing it, and they can understand and they realize that you're doing it, and they kind of understand the imitation piece, even at a very basic level. They will move on from the vowel sounds and start doing more consonant vowel chains, which are things like ba 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 ba, da 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 da, and then mama mama mama, which unfortunately usually comes after the other ones, but not always. So we start encouraging the consonant vowel chains, and those eventually become shorter and shorter to where they just become dada and mama, and where they understand that it kind of means somebody, but maybe not. And then they eventually again get to the point where they do understand that dada means dad and mama means mom. Now, these consonant vowel chains, the ba 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 da 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 da, those should all be going on around 4 to 6, 7 months of age. So that should give you kind of an idea. And after that when they're saying dada and mama, and if it's really still not specific to you, that's okay. And usually that should become more specific around the time that they turn one. One thing you can look for here too, and it's not something that people often think about, is tongue lateralization. So we want them to be able to move their tongue left and right in their mouth. And I guess they could stick their tongue out and also do it. But it's an important skill to have for when they're learning how to eat. And this is, you know, 6 to 12 months is a good time when they should really be practicing this and be able to take a bite and take the food and use their tongue and move it over to the left side or to the right side where their teeth are on the sides, their molars, for chewing. And if they don't have this lateralization, then it's going to be hard to get them to understand chewing food. So this is one thing to keep an eye on, and you can encourage this just from doing silly play activities, looking in the mirror or just imitating you and watching their tongue and see if they can imitate doing what you're doing with your tongue, and especially practicing moving it side to side. Now, the final activity that I've put on my list is messy play. And this is oftentimes not the parents' favorite activity of some of the kids that I've worked with before. But it is certainly an important activity that all babies should be able to go through and should be encouraged to do. So around the time when you're starting baby foods and introducing the spoon with them and teaching them how to take food other than a bottle or nursing, you start to see them naturally. Babies will, of course, stick their fingers in their mouth when you're feeding them and get food on their fingers. And sometimes it gets spilled on their tray. These things are all actually good things to happen. And in fact, I don't typically wipe their hands off when this happens. Now, I understand if you've got somewhere to go right after they're done eating, you don't necessarily want their hands getting messy and getting it all over their clothes or their hair or whatever's going to happen. But during a time when you know you're not going to be running out the door and it's pretty much okay if they get a little bit messy, I would definitely let it happen. This is a time when babies start to experience food, and by getting it on their hands especially, they're able to get an idea of what it feels like before it gets to their mouth, even though you've probably already been putting it in their mouth just to feed them. But it's a good way for them to make that connection. This is what it feels like on my hands, and this is what it feels like in my mouth. And I can understand that even at a very basic level, they're getting that. And the more foods that they start to try and eat, and the more things that you introduce, the more they will be willing to accept those new foods if they're able to feel them on their hands. So it is, I understand, sometimes tedious to have to clean up such a mess, but like I said, it doesn't have to happen at every single mealtime, but I would encourage you to allow it to happen quite frequently. That way they're getting a good amount of exposure on their hands, and they're able to get that experience and that exposure to the different textures, because the textures do change as they start to go from just puree to a puree with some texture in it, and then increasing the texture as you go along until they're taking table foods, soft table foods, and other finger foods that they will be picking up and bringing to their mouth. So the being allowed to experience this messy play does encourage the hand to the mouth activity, which also can help with their being able to feed themselves finger foods, which is how they usually start when they start feeding themselves first with their fingers and then later on with the spoon and fork. So by getting this practice early on when it doesn't really matter because you're still feeding them and they're getting full that way, they are getting a lot of practice at getting it there and getting better at it. And it just helps them to be more willing to accept new things. kids that don't get this opportunity, or kids that usually, if they don't get the opportunity, a lot of times I've discovered it's because they don't want to do it, and their parents are generally pretty much okay with that because they don't want them to get messy anyway. So what happens, though, with those kiddos is that a lot of times they are more of a picky eater. They don't really generally want to try new things. They pretty much stick to the same things that they have gotten used to over time. So some kids will also have, you know, these are kids, usually when I see that, it's because they have some kind of a tactile sensitivity, and so they don't really want it in their mouth anyway, because they might choke on it or gag on it because they don't like the way the texture is. It's kind of a circle as far as they don't want to get messy and their parents are usually okay with it. And those are the kids in my mind that really, really need it the most. So I would definitely encourage you, if you have a child who you think you're really happy about them being so neat when they eat, I would say that to me could potentially be a concern. So, it's really more of a natural thing for kids to want to get messy or to be okay with getting messy, at least not getting upset with it. So if they're getting upset with it and you're finding out that once they're eating more table foods and they're, you know, 1 to 2, 3 years old and they're really limited on their diet, that you probably need to talk to your pediatrician or to an occupational therapist or potentially speech therapist about it. Okay, guys. Also, don't forget to check out the Joacki Writer app, JoackyWriter. It is a tracing and typing app that was created for kids with special needs, and it was developed by parents with a child who was diagnosed with autism. And it's designed to help kids and individuals improve their fine motor and their reading skills. They use a token economy and a reinforcer board, which helps motivate the kids to stay on task and to stay focused and work for the thing that they're wanting to work for. So check it out. It's on the iTunes App Store. You can also read more about it on the Community Resource Directory at my website. So don't forget to check that out as well. One final thing for today. Also wanted to thank those of you who have been supporting me by doing your Amazon shopping through my website. It really does show me that you're out there, you're listening, and you want to encourage me to continue putting out more shows. So again, thank you for all the support, and also thanks for listening today.